that fund runs out, you can't cross over those lines. I think that'll force the court administrator back to the e-board, and they may say go outside the other fund, but what we're setting the language here is no, you can't, there's no, you can't, unless the funds are designated specifically for that fund, you can't use any other funds. So the e-board would be forced to make that appropriation or find some other means of coming up with the funding.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
I would like to request that unless there's objection, that it be the policy of this committee that we go on record that passage of this bill by this committee in no way indicates our intent that the judicial budget would be looked to any more than any other budget if indigent defense funds ran out.
So noted. Is there further discussion? Representative Hamlin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've had trouble with this concept from the very beginning when the state became involved, I believe it was the 1981 session, with the reorganization of the state court system and the indigent defense system and what it's evolved to. To be blunt, I think what we're doing is moving towards a lawsuit where the state court, Mr. Linden reports to the Chief Justice, whether or not one defines him as separate from the Chief Justice or not, I think is irrelevant. The court, that is the people we elect to make the ultimate determination of guilt or innocence in criminal system in a free society, will be involved in the direction and the budget of those, of whether or not those people who are accused and ultimately convicted or not convicted of a crime were defended and defended adequately, which is in this society I understand is a constitutional right. By approving this bill based on the financial exigencies of 1987, we have put ourselves in a position of drawing the line, trying to keep the line of demarcation where someone that ultimately judges the guilt or innocence has a finger in whether or not that person has an adequate defense. I just cannot approve that, and I think somebody else will somewhere along the line file a lawsuit that will prove it. I don't think you can move the direction we're moving and get away with it for very long.
Okay, is there further discussion or comment? Questions? Council?
Chairman, I'd just like to direct everyone to Section 9 of the amendments. In particular, Representative Barna, I think that this is an attempt, I think it will be a successful attempt to put in the firewall.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I could just comment further.
Representative Barna.
Comment further. I want, in the event that the Judicial Department needs to go to Ways and Means, I want them to be able to go to Ways and Means saying the Judiciary Committee told us very clearly that it was their policy and it was the public policy established by that committee that they did not desire to have the judicial funds raided. I want that absolutely clear in the record as well as in the bill.
So noted. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hamlin.
I want to say that I agree with the concept promoted by Representative Bunn.
Thank you. Further discussion?
I've had some informal discussions to that effect with members, but I'm glad it's formal. I have Ways and Means, I'm glad it's formal.
Thank you. Representative Phillips.
Mike, would you look at page 2, section 7, line 27? Then flip over the page to line 6. We leave open 2 date periods, July 1 blank, And then it talks about revenues and whatnot, and then it goes down subsection 2, beginning July 1 blank. Do you have any idea when those dates, what those dates are going to be, or are we purposely leaving them blank for statutory reasons?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's the overlap period, in case there are any funds left over. I know there was $900,000 appropriated to carry the fund through the end of this fiscal year.
Give some linen up here for a minute. I remember we went over that, and I can't. It's a good question. Did we ask Mr. Linden to comment on that?
Sure. Representative Burton, I think that it's my understanding that those blanks probably can be, if we could act conceptually and double check with the fiscal office, Mr. Linden's comments would be welcome. I'd also note in section 28, the effective date has the emergency clause provision. It is also blank. It's my sense that that should take effect immediately, although apparently council or whoever drafted these didn't get a chance to confirm that. Mr. Linden, if you can speak to that.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Bill Linden, stakeholder administrator. Section 28 is the emergency clause. It doesn't have a date in there. I would just urge you to put the earliest possible date so that we can transition from the board to the judicial department as quickly as possible. We have contracts running out June 30th, and as quickly, the earliest date you can put in there, the best for the department, as far as I'm concerned. As far as Section 7 that Representative Phillips raised, I think that I think we're talking about the current biennium there, and we just need to add those particular dates.
So the dates would be to reflect the current biennium.
87 to
Mr. Chairman, I would so move to amend.
Okay.
So what on the
Section 7 would be the dates to reflect the current biennium, and the Section 28
be effective upon passage.
Right.
Okay. Representative Bellamy has amended, has moved to amend Section 7 where the blanks exist to reflect the current biennium. We'll double check that with fiscal to make sure it's correct, and also based upon Mr. Linden's representation, Representative Bellamy further amends Section 28 so that the emergency clause indicates it would become effective upon passage. Any objection to those amendments? If not, they're adopted. Okay, on the main motion, is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Bun?
No.
Burton?
Aye.
Aye.
Hanlon?
No.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Votes no. Motion's adopted. I would note for the record, I think, that the policy is expressed by the vote by this committee, and as I think will be articulated on the floor, is that we feel that judicial department funds should not be used or contemplated their use in any way, shape, or form by the emergency board or any other fiscal committee in order to balance any deficiencies in the indigent defense budget which may appear in the next biennium. Representative Burton, would you like to carry this measure?
Certainly.
Okay, the next measure is 3040.
Mr. Chair, before you go on to that,
Representative Hanlon,
what can we do to make that your last statement an effective statement? Beyond what you just said.
If I had the answer to that, Representative Hanlon, I don't know that I'd be occupying this chair necessarily. I think we need to communicate that on the floor, in the floor debate, as well as to those folks who serve on the Ways and Means Committee and the Emergency Board and the leadership of this body. Do we have the amendments up yet on 3027? We do. Let's take up 3027 and conclude that discussion.
Excuse me.
Chairman, the amendments, as you'll note, are pretty substantial. And I think if we could give the committee a few minutes to read through it, either some questions may be answered or other questions may be raised.
Basically, the amendments are a substitute for the bill as printed. Is that your understanding, Council?
I believe this, what it does, these are Attorney General amendments, and what it basically does, in addition to what is in the original printed bill, is insert the bar in here, the bar organization, requiring them to conduct continuing legal education courses. That's how it differs from the original bill.
Representative
Phillips.
Thank you. If you read on line 2 of the amendments, the Oregon State Bar and each state agency having licensing authority over a public or private official as defined by 148.740. Mm-hmm. If you read the original bill, you're talking about professional licensing board of law enforcement personnel. Where does it, each licensing board of public or private official, I mean, we put in those specific statutory reference, and what does that encompass?
Can I read that to you?
I think Representative Burton is going to read to us from 418.740.
We will not have a reading from a rendition of 418.
Representative Burton.
Thank you. The agencies, and I'll tell you, I'm going to actually, you may be more familiar with this particular statute than I am, because there's some differences. Basically, in public and private official, is a physician, a dentist, a school employee, a licensed practical nurse, an employee of the Department of Human Resources, County Health Department, community mental health programs, a county juvenile department, and a licensed child caring agency, psychologist. That's that. So those are the ones that are defined in there.
Okay. Then to answer Representative Hanlon's earlier question, this is, we've just about hit everybody in the state that we could possibly think of statutorily. Well, I guess for just on a form and style, I still think on the amendments on line 9, to be more specific, training and education curriculum, when you talk about such a diverse group of people, some that have continuing education, some that don't, it might be a term of art for us, but when we look at somebody who's going to read the statute, I'm not sure that it's as clear and convincing as we might think it is.
Does that rise to a motion, Representative
Yes,
Phillips?
I would move an amendment to the bill to strike on lines 9 and lines 24 the word continuing.
Okay. Representative Phillips moves on lines 9 and 24 of the dash 3 amendments to strike the word continuing prior to education. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanlon.
I want to oppose the motion. I think that the agencies defined and the interest defined the subject matter of child abuse, both the effect of that on the family unit, on the accused, and the child are of such great importance that not only should these people be trained, whether they're considered instant experts or not, but they should be continually trained. For that reason, I would oppose the motion.
Further discussion? Representative Bunn.
I'm just looking at the definition of definition of public or private official, and Representative Burton and I have been visiting about it a little bit, but it includes school employees, and I wonder how broad that is, and clergymen. I don't know if clergymen are registered by the state, but I we really got a broad group of people and wondering what impact we're going to have by requiring that. And I don't mean to be absurd by this, but a janitor of a school, and maybe we want that, to have training in this particular kind of thing.
Representative Burton?
The question here that came up in my mind as we went through that, it is, if you read in on line 15 and 16 of page 1 of the amendments, it's each state agency having licensing authority over these. So it's restricted to those that have a licensing authority. But the question is, I believe, are clergymen licensed? I believe they are. And there's others that would be included in that. So it's a little broad. Although school officials would only be those people who hold teaching certificates. I assume that's a licensing authority and not necessarily janitors. But it's a little broader than I explained.
Representative Bond.
Mr. Chairman, with clergymen, we get into another issue of to what degree, and I haven't thought through this, but to what degree the state can impose its training requirements on a religious official. I just haven't thought through that at all.
Okay, well, let's speak first and try to deal first with Representative Phillips' motion on the amendment to delete the word continuing on lines 9 and 24. Deal with that first, and then we can deal with the balance of the amendment of the bill. Is there further discussion on Representative Phillips' motion? Okay, if not, the clerk will call the roll.
Feldman?
No.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Hanlon?
No.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
No. Motion's adopted. Continuing's deleted. Okay, back to the motion on the dash three amendments, which now represent the bill. Is there further discussion? And the motion on the bill do pass to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Miller.
What was the projected fiscal impact, if any?
I don't know that we have a statement available in our files. My notes from the hearing, which we had earlier, indicate a possible impact of $350,000. I don't know if I can speak specifically to the source of that. We did have testimony from the training coordinator for the Children's Services Division. Apparently this bill, in its amended form, picks up much of the specific wording in House Bill 3036, which had been introduced at the request of the Department of Justice. Representative Burton?
Well, I had a note in there in my file, but I don't really know it. Someone must have mentioned that without having a specific analysis.
Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
No.
Burton?
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Miller?
No.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. The bill goes to Ways and Means. Okay, let's try 3040. Relating to crime victims. Council or Representative Burton?
Okay, this is a bill which was brought to us by the Department of Justice and Representative Springer. And the bill basically deals with the Victim Compensation Program, which assists victims of violence, crimes, and medical expenses, lost wages, funeral expenses. However, the program fails to cover certain expenses and compensate victims when they should not have been compensated in some cases. And an example of that's given in the SMA. The bill itself would reduce the financial loss a victim must show from $250 to $100 program eligibility. So it lowers the threshold for getting program eligibility. It deletes the exclusion for victims related to or living with the assailant. It authorizes awards for funeral expenses to anyone assuming financial responsibility. So So if there's an assumption there, then that's allowed to be picked up. And increases the maximum compensation for those expenses from $1,000 to $2,000, removing the $1,000 limitation on psychiatric and psychological expenses. Allows payment of counseling expenses for victims, family, and child abuse cases when treatment is necessary for victim recovery. Eliminates the requirement that a victim pay the first $250 of any loss. Stopping of payments for loss of earnings if the victim is incarcerated. And clarifies the state's right to recover from the victim any funds paid if the victim subsequently recovers damage from the assailant. There were amendments, which are the Dash 1 amendments, that you should have copies of. Those were adopted. I would move, therefore, Mr. Chairman, House Bill 3040 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I don't believe there was a fiscal on this one.
None that's come to our attention. Representative Burton moves House Bill 3040 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
No.
Bun?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Any volunteers?
I'll take this one. Boy, is that your request? Do you want it or not?
I'll let you go ahead and take it. Representative Phillips, thank you. Okay, 3377.
Mr. Chairman, this again comes from the Bill Subcommittee. There is a Dash 1 amendment you have in front of you. This is a bill which relates to convicted felons. And convicted felons are prohibited from possessing concealable firearms, which is defined as a firearm with a barrel less than 12 inches. Unless if it's over 12 inches, it isn't a concealed weapon. And law enforcement officers often encounter former felons carrying sawed-off shotguns with a barrel of 12 and a quarter inches long. This particular measure would make it a crime for a convicted felon to possess any firearm, with the exception that if a felon could petition the court where the conviction took place or where the person was currently living to allow that person to possess a lawful rifle or shotgun for purposes of hunting. And the amendments that were adopted to that allows a person to petition the court where they're living or at the time of the conviction with that court, or if they've moved at the DA and that district attorney in that particular district. I move House Bill 3377 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Burton moves House Bill 3377 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy? Aye.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Dix?
No.
No.
Miller?
No.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Any volunteers? Representative Burton?
I thought I was going to get that one too.
Oh. 3041. House Bill 3041. This creates three degrees of sexual abuse rather than the current two in relationship to sexual abuse of minors. In all three degrees, there's a common element of sexual contact. What differs is in this, and what we've differed in this particular bill is the age of the victim.
third-degree sexual abuse would occur if the victim is under 18, but not less than 14. It would be a Class A misdemeanor with a maximum penalty of 1 year. Secondary sexual assault would occur if the victim is under 14, but less than 12. It would be Class C felony with a maximum penalty of 5 years. First-degree sexual abuse would occur if the victim were under 12. It would be classified as a B felony with a maximum penalty of 10 years. It was, this bill, I believe, was the Oregon District Attorney's Association top priority bill, at least one of those.
They have several top priority
several
bills.
There's lots of organizations that do that. But it certainly is on, whether it's the top, it was brought to us at the request of the District Attorney Association, Representative Springer, and the Department of Justice. I would move House Bill 3041 to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Burton moves House Bill 3041 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellman?
Aye.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Representative Bunn, I understand you'd like to carry this bill.
Chairman?
Representative Miller?
Having voted on the prevailing side of House Joint Memorial 16, I'd like to serve notice of possible reconsideration.
Okay. So noted. That'll carry the matter over to our next full committee meeting, which is
Monday.
Okay. 3043.
Mr. Chairman, this bill, I didn't realize we're doing so much work, comes from the criminal subcommittee. It deals with, enables a court to conduct a sentencing procedure without involving the jury if the defendant is pleaded guilty or no contest prior to introduction of evidence. This bill eliminates the charade, basically, of having jurors go through the motions in certain cases when, in fact, the defendant has pleaded guilty to a crime in the first place. The intent here, there were some amendments made in the subcommittee, which are the dash two amendments. I think there's one that we probably, that included some other amendments. The subcommittee amendments actually allows the court to take a plea of guilty in an aggravated murder case without involving a jury. I move House Bill 3043 to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Burton moves House Bill 3043 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do I understand, Representative Burton, that these amendments are at the request of the District Attorney's Association?
Mr. Chairman, I believe so. I'm trying to find who brought those amendments to us. I believe that those were, or it was the Circuit Courts. Mr. Taylor, you recall who were the amendments?
I believe it was a request from the Judicial Department.
Of the Judicial Department?
Judicial. I have a letter from Judge Gilroy, who's the presiding judge in Clackamas County, dated February 17, 1987, which indicates that, and he also included a column which had appeared in the Oregonian written by Fred Leeson, pointing out that the way that the death penalty and aggravated murder statutes have been prepared, the district attorney, as I understand, Mr. Collins is here to correct me if I'm incorrect, may have no choice but to bring a death penalty case, though in fact there may be no evidence, or it's the decision of the district attorney not to present evidence as it relates to the death penalty itself. However, the law requires a procedure which, as Judge Gilroy has described it, is basically a charade. Because, in fact, for a jury to render a decision on death penalty when, in fact, there is no evidence supporting such a punishment, in point of fact, means that there would be no possibility of death penalty being imposed. So Judge Gilroy suggested these amendments were proposed, and I don't believe, it's more correct to say, I don't believe there was any objection by the District Attorney's Association and Mr. Collins is nodding affirmatively to that position.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burton.
Let me go back. I suddenly always came back and focused on some of the bills going on here. What we have is a gut and stuff issue, which this the material on House Bill 3043 initially related to the statute of limitations. Those measures were finally taken care of in House Bill 2470. So we had essentially a vehicle by which to bring about these amendments, which were recommended by Judge Gilroy, and essentially what you have there is the dash two amendments are the bill now. And it's beginning to focus in. My light reality is coming back. It's a long day. So that's that. You're correct. That's where there's amendments. It's not amendments. It's actually the bill.
Okay. Is there further discussion on 3043 as amended? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellman?
Aye.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Denman?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Any volunteers?
Representative.
Mike said 203, though. We ought to write it out.
Yes.